Welcome to the show, everybody. Hope you're having a good week. We are here to do a little bit of news roundup. A few things going on this week, in particular with the White House looking at Bitcoin mining or saying that they're going to look at Bitcoin mining. Anyways, we'll get to the bottom of that in a moment. As always, this is live. Anything can happen. So I defer to my friend Bill here.
We'll do it live. Okay. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
If you have not already, like, subscribe, share. All those things really help get this in front of more eyeballs. And I am Ben with the BTC Sessions. This is your daily session.
Hodl the Bitcoin.
We'll do it live, apparently. All right. Let's take a look before we get into the show where we are in the market today. This is the Bitbo.io dashboard. We're sitting at $30,341 per coin. Single US dollar will pick you up 3,296 sats, 90.75% of all Bitcoin have been mined. Fees have been kind of ping-ponging a bunch lately. I saw some 20 sats per byte earlier today, but sitting at 11 sats per byte for next block right now. If you're willing to wait an hour, 2 sats per byte should do you. I've sent through a few transactions for low lately. I've been trying to hit that happy medium doing my tutorials and everything. So anyways, just be conscious of the fees. Use RBF, all that kind of stuff. All right. Shout out to sponsors of the show, shakepay.com. If you are in Canada and you're buying Bitcoin, super easy way to do it. E-transfers in and out. No deposit or withdrawal fees. Thin spread at the bottom there. And use the link down below. After your first $100 purchase, when you sign up for ShakePay, we give you $30 for free. You get the same deal for referring friends and family. And then, of course, you can also shake your phone every single day for free sats. And they've got their sats bag Visa card. They also have ShakePaid, by the way. That's where if you use the sats bag Visa card, there's a chance you could get the entire thing paid back in sats. So check them out. Links are down below. Ledin.io. These guys are awesome. We got Mario going to be on the show tomorrow. But Ledin, of course, what do these guys do? You can use your Bitcoin for a bunch of different stuff. If you're in a pinch and you need your hands on dollars, you can deposit Bitcoin here and get a loan of dollars to your bank account without having to sell your Bitcoin. When you pay back those dollars, you get back the same amount of sats. They also have savings accounts for Bitcoin and USDC, so you can earn some interest on your Bitcoin. And also, by the way, if you use that with the link down below and you fund your account, you get $10 for free. And beyond that, they're getting into Bitcoin-backed mortgages rolling out here in Canada and soon in the US. So be sure to check that out. They also, of course, have their B2X. If you're feeling mega bullish on these dips here, perhaps check it out. Again, links are down below. Bitrefill.com, one of the easiest ways to help yourself live on Bitcoin. I use it all the time. And you can pick up any gift card your little heart desires with Bitcoin, both on-chain and Lightning. You earn sats back as you shop. You earn more sats back if you use your referral code. And they also are rolling out bill payments in the US. So if you're down there looking to live on a Bitcoin standard, this could be your answer. So check them out. Again, links in the show notes. Keystone, one of my favorite, most used hardware wallets, 100% air-gapped. This thing is a beast, solid build. Everything's offline via QR code, so you don't plug it into anything internet connected. That keeps your keys safe and offline. Upgrade to the Bitcoin only firmware, works awesome with Blue Wallet, Sparrow, Spectre, and pretty great in multi-sig. That QR code scanning is awesome. So check them out, and I do have a full link down below, as well as a tutorial if you want to check it out. Finally, if you're backing up any important Bitcoin wallet, getting solid steel. Bill Fodel over at privacypros.io has you covered. Paper doesn't cut it, you know, fire damage, water damage, all that stuff. A lot less easy to misplace this thing. You know, pieces of paper, they tend to get lost. Hunk of steel, a little bit harder to do that. So this is how I back up my stuff. Check them out. Links are in the show notes. And with that, let's dive into the news. It's talking a little bit about the White House. What's up with them? What's up with Joe? So this from Bitcoin Magazine. White House to craft Bitcoin mining policy addressing energy use. So the Biden administration is crafting policy recommendations aimed at lessening the energy consumption and emissions footprint of Bitcoin and other proof-of-work cryptocurrencies, according to a report from Bloomberg Law. The publication said it spoke to the Principal Assistant Director for Energy for the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, who offered some insight into the impending policy attempts. I like that word, attempts. It's important, if this thing is going to be part of our financial system in any meaningful way, that it's developed responsibly and minimizes total emissions. We think, when we think about digital assets, it has to be a climate and energy. It has to be a climate and energy conversation. What about legacy finance? Seems to be lacking from this conversation. Regulators were tapped by President Biden's administration earlier this year in a whole of government approach to understanding and regulating the broader cryptocurrency space as Biden signed an executive order. The order sets timeframes most within a 120 to 180 day period to publish reports in conjunction with other governing bodies intended to guide the administration through a largely misunderstood market. So anyways, for the comments here from the same individual, we need to think about what would be appropriate policy responses under a world that shifted to proof of stake, or a world that has some continuous mix of proof of work and proof of stake. Proof of work is energy intensive by design, but it also increases security. Well, at least there's some acknowledgement there. We've seen reports on noise, local pollution, older fossil generators being restarted in communities. These are not trivial loads. Nick Carter had a good thread on this that I'm going to touch on. He said, if you want to understand how absurd this is, think about this case study, but with gold mining. For context, emissions associated with gold mining are around two times those of Bitcoin today. So let's say you're the USG and you want to end gold mining in order to save the sea turtles or whatever. You could ban gold mining in the US. The US is the fourth biggest country for gold mining, but gold is a globally distributed commodity. It's still going to be mined. In fact, this would be a huge subsidy to miners in the other big regions, Russia, Australia, China. You could impose very hostile regulations on gold miners in the US and demand they jump through all sorts of ESG hoops. Okay, that just makes them less competitive. Again, a subsidy to their higher emitting competitors abroad. You could ban gold ownership in the US. That would surely reduce the demand for gold, the amount of gold mined, and thus associated emissions, right? Wrong. Banning gold ownership in the 30s increased production and real price of gold. You could replace gold by law with some kind of emissionless fiat substitute, like proof of stake. Everyone would simply adopt that, right? Wrong. Going to full fiat increased demand for gold by a lot. Moving to fiat meant households and businesses chose to buy gold to deal with fiat volatility. This is why I keep saying, if you want to understand Bitcoin energy debate, you need to understand the previous gold resource cost debate. It's the same debate. The US is trying to reduce Bitcoin's energy consumption. That's just a longhand way of saying they want to reduce the value of Bitcoin. 30 to 45 million Americans own some degree of Bitcoin. An interesting strategy for the most popular administration in living memory. Can USG reduce the price of Bitcoin? Probably in the short term. They could go full CCP and jail devs, turn Bitcoiners into dissidents, arrest CEOs, etc. Does that help them with legitimacy? Does that enhance US as the number one property rights respecting nation? Or is it a self-own? Yeah, good points there. Again, like he's talking about, if you get overburdensome regulations, it's just going to be a boon for other markets. Like, here's an article about oil companies in the Middle East using excess gas for Bitcoin mining. Again, so this is Crusoe Energy. It is a U.S. firm that specializes in using excess natural gas for Bitcoin mining. It will be deploying generators and mining equipment to capture flared gas in Muscat, Oman, as the Middle East looks to cut emissions, according to a report from Bloomberg. Chase Lockmiller, Crusoe's CEO, explained in the report that the company felt it was important to have a presence in the Middle East and North African region, as the location accounts for 38% of the world's burning of excess natural gas from oil wells. Quote, having to the buy-in from nations that are actively trying to solve the flaring issue is what we are looking for. Now, beyond this, here's another article. Kenya's largest power provider to offer geothermal energy to Bitcoin miners. So KenGen, Kenya Electricity Generating Company PLC, the leading supplier of electricity in Kenya, wants to provide excess geothermal power to Bitcoin mining companies, according to a report from Quartz Africa. Quote, we have the space and the power is near, which helps with stability, KenGen's geothermal development director reportedly explained in an interview. Kenya is the top producer of geothermal energy in Africa, delivering over 14,000 megawatts of power with the equipment capacity of only 863 megawatts. Holy crap. They're not even using 1/14th of the energy that they can produce. Along the Rift Valley circuit zone, an estimated 10,000 megawatts of geothermal energy lies largely dormant. I think that's on top of the 14,000. Wow. Miners looking to take advantage of this offering have already approached KenGen to discuss the offer, and some have requested to start with 20 megawatts and upscale later. Considering there are no Bitcoin mining farms currently in Africa, it is reported that those interested in the offering are expected to be mainly from the US and Europe. Currently, over 80% of KenGen's produced power is provided from renewable energy sources like hydro and wind, in addition to geothermal usage. However, KenGen does not openly disclose its excess power capacity. I mean, it kind of does in the way that they only have the capacity to handle 863 megawatts and they've got 14,000 plus 10,000 dormant. Is that not a little bit of a disclosure? I guess they're not disclosing their excess in terms of the 863. But anyways, again, these are just examples of areas that will benefit if you get overly burdensome regulations out of the US, which there very well may be. And to be honest, at this point, I don't really give a shit because this is a global network and people outside of those poorly regulated jurisdictions will directly benefit. And those jurisdictions that have overregulated it, they're going to be the ones that hurt. And eventually they're going to have to reverse course if they want to remain competitive. It's not like the days of old where you can just say, oh, well, we're going to set the precedent and the whole world will listen. No, this you can mine from anywhere. There's not a whole lot of gatekeepers there if you're mobile. So, yeah. Anyways, speaking of things that the Biden administration can't control, let's talk inflation. So Janet Yellen came out, the Treasury Secretary, former head of the Federal Reserve. She concedes she was wrong on the path that inflation would take. Pretends to be shocked. Let's read a little bit here. So the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen admitted Tuesday that she had failed to anticipate how long high inflation would continue to plague American consumers as the Biden administration works to contain a mounting political liability. I think I was wrong then about the path that inflation would take. Now, of course, back in 2021, her comments, she said that inflation posed only a small risk. The admission that this admission was the latest indication that the administration's expectations of a normalizing economy were thrown into disarray by continuing pandemic and the war in Europe. Was it thrown into disarray by that or by just printing a fuckload of money and it gradually sloshing around the system? I'm not saying those other things don't have an impact as well, but maybe there's an underlying issue there somewhere. As I mentioned, There have been unanticipated and large shocks to the economy that have boosted energy and food prices and supply bottlenecks that have affected our economy badly that I didn't, at the time, didn't fully understand, but we recognize that now. So anyways, she came out and did this announcement, and then now we're seeing breaking. Biden White House putting together a new team to lead economic messaging, de-emphasizing the role of Janet Yellen and elevating Brian Deese and Gina Raimondo. So Brian Deese is the White House director of the National Economic Council, and Gina is the Secretary of Commerce. Brian Deese is likely the person who put together the recent Wall Street Journal opinion column from Biden. And just to give you a taste of that particular column, Biden, quote unquote, wrote, "With the right policies, the U.S. can transition from recovery to stable, steady growth and bring down inflation without giving up all these historical gains." We'll get to have our cake and eat it too. To achieve this goal, he proposed passing clean energy tax credits to bring down gas prices, improving infrastructure, cracking down on greedy corporations. Man, running the gamut of just really ticking all those boxes, ramping up housing construction, reducing the cost of childcare, and empowering Medicare to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies. Okay, so rather than me go on a disjointed rant here, I found an article that kind of nicely sums up why this is just such a load of shit. It's an article called "Three Reasons Biden's New Plan for Fighting Inflation is a Joke." Number one, it completely ignores the real root cause of inflation. While many factors influence price levels, rampant money printing by America's central bank, the Federal Reserve, has played the biggest part in our ongoing inflation spiral. The Fed created trillions of dollars out of thin air to stimulate the economy during the pandemic. The inevitable result was that dollars in circulation lost value and prices rose. Rather than addressing this by scaling back the Federal Reserve, Biden's proposed plan for fighting inflation is to keep letting the Fed wreak havoc on our economy. This is from the president as well, from that same article I talked about. First, the Federal Reserve has a primary responsibility to control inflation. My predecessor demeaned the Fed, and past presidents have sought to influence its decision inappropriately during periods of elevated inflation. I won't do this. I have appointed highly qualified people from both parties to lead that institution. I agree with their assessment that fighting inflation is our top economic challenge right now. So his plan is to do nothing? While the Fed is supposedly independent and not under Biden's control, he has bizarrely appointed central bank officials who reject the principles of sound money and instead embrace the same money printing philosophy that got us into this mess in the first place. He even renominated Jerome Powell, the Fed chair who oversaw his calamity over the last few weeks. Now, number two, he actually calls for more government spending and intervention. Quote, second, we need to take every practical step to make things even more affordable for families during this moment of economic uncertainty and boost productive capacity of our economy over time. So he's calling for more government spending on energy subsidies, childcare, housing, healthcare, and more because these areas are seeing the biggest price increases. He also calls for a variety of regulations, price caps, and forms of government intervention. So price controls and then spending a fuckload on government programs to fight the inflation on those things. Now, one, where's the money coming from? Because you're not going to be able to tax that. And two, if you print it, then you're causing more inflation. It goes on to say the irony here is really quite something. Housing, healthcare, and energy are already some of the most highly regulated and subsidized industries in America. They're expensive and they're rising costs despite these efforts, but because of them. That's right. Biden's plan for fighting inflation only doubles down on the failed big government economics that got us into this mess in the first place. And third, gaslighting Americans about reducing the deficit. Biden's third suggestion for reducing the deficit is actually on the right track. He said, third, we need to keep reducing the federal deficit, which will help ease price pressures. The problem is that Biden's policy since taking office had made our budget rolls much worse, not better, and his attempt to take credit for deficit reduction is gaslighting at its worst. In its first year in office, the Biden administration did indeed bring the deficit down to $2.8 trillion, a deficit still nearly triple that of 2019 and the second largest in history. In fact, a Congressional Budget Office analysis concluded that the federal deficit would have fallen more than twice as fast, a decline of more than $870 billion, if the White House had not implemented new spending programs. Adding to the absurdity of Biden's claim is that he would have spent even more if he could have gotten the approval for it. So more or less, expect more inflation over time. And even if it becomes a disinflationary environment, it doesn't mean that prices are falling. It means that things are going up less fast. When the CPI data comes out and it says whatever it may be at, let's say it goes from 7% to 6% to 5% to 4%. That doesn't mean that prices are dropping percentage points. It means that they're still going up. They're just not going up at quite as fast of a rate. And again, like the public at large doesn't know a lot of these terms, or like in general, how bad inflation can be, even in these single digit realms. It's pretty bad. Like your purchasing power gets cut in half in very short order. It's scary. Anyways, I guess what's the final word here on all of this? I don't know. Like, governments don't know what the fuck they're doing, I guess. Insulate yourself. I don't know where I'm going with this, but whatever. Let's move on. Best of luck, Joe. I wanted to talk about this a little bit. Ronin Dojo just had a new update. I did a video on Ronin Dojo a little while back. If you're unfamiliar, it's basically a node implementation, plug and play. It's a backend for Samurai Wallet, for Whirlpool, CoinJoin, all that kind of stuff. You can link other wallets to it to refer to that node as their kind of beacon of truth. But anyways, they have a new update. They said, we are happy to get this release out for the next batch of Tantos and hope to continue improving stability. So I upgraded mine today. It looks pretty, by the way, purring away. It's been going for 43 days. Oh, log out. Too bad. Oh, well, you got to see it for a second. Anyways, update of Dojo version 1.14.0. There's the newest version of Mempool Space. There is a new debugging tool, and they removed Spectre. What's that about? They put in brackets, we don't support KYC services. So this, I was like, what? KYC services? So Spectre dropped an update where they basically have like a service that you can link in. You can link in if you have a Swan account. So if you're DCAing through Swan and you're purchasing on regular intervals, you can basically have it linked so it will send addresses to Swan at certain intervals, not the full XPub. So not all of your addresses, but just like a select few addresses to Swan. And then you can just have it DCA directly into your wallet, which is, you know, kind of cool. If you're using Swan, then that's fantastic. So I'm going to play devil's advocate here to Ronin Dojo in terms of what was said in the tweet. Spectre isn't KYC. They offer an easy plugin so that if you are buying Bitcoin through Swan, there's a quick link to be able to, without revealing your XPub, send over addresses automatically rather than manually sending to your wallet every single time. So yeah, like, I don't know, like, if we're getting that nitty gritty about it, I mean they can do whatever fuck they want. They built it. It's, I don't know, that feels somewhat unfortunate, but whatever, I guess. I tend to gravitate towards Sparrow Wallet anyways, when I'm using stuff, and I don't have access to Swan. So kind of inconsequential for me, but when I see that, it seems unnecessarily, sensitive, I guess. I don't know what the good word for it is, but I don't know. Like I scrolled through some of the comments and people were like, RIP, a good project and everything. Spectre isn't KYC. You can just fucking run Spectre and you don't have to use Swan. It's like a thing under a Dropbox of services that could potentially be easily tied into the wallet if you decide to use them. They should tread carefully. Like, you don't want to be inundated with like a ton of different like services and crap as like tie-ins that you just don't want to see. You should be able to like collapse or hide the services tab, maybe would be ideal. But if people want to use that, you know, it's not like an imposed thing. So yeah, I don't know. I don't see the big fucking deal here, to be honest. You know, Ronin Dojo is awesome. Swan is awesome. Spectre is awesome. And I don't see any problem really with any of this. So anyways, I'll move on from there. Suggested piece of content of the week. I came across this is like a month, 2 months old, but it's hilarious. It's a guy from named Joma Tech. I've actually never watched his channel before. He does a lot of like different tech related videos and everything, but he's been doing some skits and stuff too. He did a video called "If Wolf of Wall Street Were About Crypto." It's basically like the Matthew McConaughey scene where he's going and he's doing the like thump on the chest and basically telling Leonardo DiCaprio the ropes. But in this, they're talking about like DeFi and other shit coins and tokens and everything, and he's basically saying it's all bullshit. We just want to separate people from their money. Like, it's nobody knows what it means. Nobody knows how it works. It's not designed to do anything. We're not doing anything. Just get their money out of their pocket into your pocket. It's a great skit. Highly recommend. You should check it out. What else was going on this week? Shout out to Evan for this tweet, because I also had some BitPay woes. I'll show you in a sec. Anyways, he said, "I shouldn't have to KYC to spend my Bitcoin at retailers, CC BitPay and Flexa HQ." And then somebody replied, "It's hard to be excited about Lightning Network adoption when it's this horribly bad. Please address this, BitPay. Requiring KYC for a simple purchase from a tech store is outrageous and completely unacceptable." Absolutely true. Basically, if you're unfamiliar, BitPay is a payment service provider, which you can plug into your business to accept Bitcoin payments. However, they require you like log in and get all of your KYC information just to like buy anything. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, you could be buying, I don't know, something for like $5. It's gonna be like, "Oh, sir, I'm gonna need your ID. I'm gonna need whatever." And that's kind of the antithesis of the point of Bitcoin. It's you no longer need that because people have final settlement when they get it. They don't need to check if you're credit worthy to accept your payment. They have the fucking money. They can send you the good, especially for the small payments. Like, okay, sure, if you're buying something for 10 grand and you're in a jurisdiction that has those, you know, AML requirements, then that's another story. But if you're buying something for 10 or 20 bucks, why are they going to require people to log in and sign up and KYC themselves to spend Bitcoin? Blow me. Funny enough, I got an email this week from somebody from the BitPay team looking for influencers and content creators to partner with. I didn't reply. I deleted the email. But I did tweet out, "Hey, you know what's better than using BitPay is BTC Pay Server. You can spin it up yourself. There's no KYC required. You can accept payments from anywhere, anyone on the globe instantaneously. And you should go ahead and do that. So I did do a tutorial video on BTC Pay Server on May. I posted it a few weeks back. Anyways, check it out. It's I did it through Voltage as well. So you can basically sign up for Voltage. You can pay via Bitcoin. All you need with Voltage is like an email address. It could be a dummy address if you wanted. So you can sign up. You can spin up a BTC Pay server and a Lightning node if you want to accept Lightning payments. And then you can start accepting payments right away. You can spin up a store and use it. You can spin up a fundraiser, whatever it may be, and it'll just work. So anyways, if you want to check that out, well worth it. The main thing I dropped this week was a tutorial on how to use Unchained for multisig. I do really like Unchained. I think what they're doing there is important. I think banking in terms of how it'll work moving forward will be this, where the bank doesn't have custody of their of your funds. They're just offering a service whereby if you screw up monumentally, they'll have your back and have like an extra key. And so you could lose most of what you have and still be okay and say, hey, I just need another signature on this transaction to reset everything. So anyways, if you've been curious about multisig and curious about Unchained, check that one out. I literally dropped it just on Monday. And of course, coming up tomorrow, we've got Why Are We Bullish? I've got Colin Sullivan from Mint Green, Mario Gibney from Ledin, and we've got John Dennehy, and he's from My First Bitcoin. They are running the pilot project for the high school Bitcoin course required for graduation. The first round of graduates are coming up at the end of this month. So kudos to them. I was invited down for it. I can't make it. But I'd like to get down there at some point this year. And then it's going to be expanding out to more schools in El Salvador. So kudos to John. But anyways, very excited to have this panel on tomorrow. It's going to be exciting. Going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you don't miss it. With that, I'm going to start wrapping up. Thank you guys so much for watching and or listening. If you're listening to this on the pod afterwards, like, subscribe, share, all important. If you want to help out the show in another way, you can hit up the previously mentioned sponsors down below. ShakePay, Ledin, BitRefill, Keystone, Bilfoddle. They're all down here. And if you really liked what you saw, you can always drop me a Bitcoin tip at my Strike page, strike.me/BTC sessions. Get there. You type in any amount you want, hit the tip button. You'll be greeted with a Lightning invoice. Or if you prefer, tap the arrow to the right. You'll see a regular Bitcoin QR code. With that, I'm out. Have yourselves a wonderful day or evening, wherever you may be. See you guys next time for your daily session.
HODL the Bitcoin.